Shalonda Baker is a fresh face in Washington, D.C. President Joe Biden named her as Deputy Director of the Office of Energy Justice. It's a new position for the law professor who previously was on the faculty at the University of Hawaii Law School. Her new book, Revolutionary Power, An Activist's Guide to the Energy Transition, was just recently released.
So I didn't set out directly to write the book. I mean, my work as a scholar, really up until I moved to Hawaii, had focused on large-scale renewable energy projects. I was interested in indigenous rights, and I had been studying the impact of large-scale renewable energy projects in Mexico. And so when I got to Hawaii, you know, a lot of my work around renewables and indigenous rights were right in front of me. But I got really interested in sort of the domestic energy policy issues, and Hawaii really foreshadowed, as you know, a lot of the issues that started to unfold around the country. And so the Hawaii story and all of the little things that I encountered during my time there really stuck with me. And as I sat down to write a book, that was the story that wanted to be told. It wasn't about, you know, the Mexico work that I had done, which actually had formed quite a large part of my academic career. It was all of the stories about Hawaii that really wanted to be told. And so that's what I did.
You did mention the fact that our Hawaiian king had electricity at Iolani Palace, you know, before the White House, which everybody here knows. But I think it was just nice to put that in perspective.
I think there's a line in that chapter that starts, before the unlawful takeover, Hawaii had power. And in the book, I'm really kind of playing with power and the way it's used in so many different ways. Obviously, it's electricity, but it's also about people power and, you know, the political power that folks have. And so for me, the fact that Hawaii was first in sort of accessing electricity, and now the state has the highest electricity costs in the country and some of the most energy burdened people in the country, I just felt like, you know, this is a way to frame this idea that power is available to folks in Hawaii, both in terms of the electricity, but also in terms of how they can garner control over the entire energy system in the state.
Well, we are watching various segments of our community work toward the goals, you know, our green goals, which are lofty goals, but there is also a little bit of a disconnect, and people need time to process, you know, when you all of a sudden see a large-scale solar farm come up in your neighborhood, or when you see the giant wind turbines up on the North Shore.
Right. The North Shore story was really the entry point to my energy justice work in the state. So I got to Hawaii in 2014, right as the state was about to embark on this 100% renewable portfolio standard, which was signed into law the summer of 2015. The state was grappling with rooftop solar, and as you know, the utility was sort of saying, whoa, 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 there's too much rooftop solar. We can't do it. It's going to blow up the grid. We need to put an end to this. And there was also this beginning of a discussion around community solar and what that would look like as an alternative to the rooftop solar that homeowners could get. What would be the entry point to solar for renters and condo dwellers? And so all of this was on the table, and a community in the North Shore that had really seen these wind turbines go up reached out to me. And at that point, I had five students who were just sort of thinking about Hawaii's energy landscape and trying to think about the justice dimensions of the energy transition in the state. And so they asked us to come and provide listening sessions in that community. And what we did was, you know, listen closely to the hopes and dreams of folks all along the North Shore. And I believe we went to three separate communities because, as you know, the North Shore is not a monolith and it's diverse in and of itself. And we did those listening tours in the context of the NextEra merger, where, you know, the Florida-based utility company was coming to what we thought experiment in Hawaii to sort of try on a vision of a clean energy future. And we were educating folks and on the North Shore about the energy system, but also listening closely to them about what they saw as a just energy future in the state. And from that process, I really learned about energy justice, both in terms of procedural justice, but also in terms of what might be possible for a place like Hawaii, where there's so many resources for clean energy, but the people are still paying so much for electricity.
And I recall the line in there, I think, when you're making reference to Hawaiian Electric and NextEra, and, you know, Hawaiian Electric was the devil we knew.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it was so fascinating to be, you know, on the ground during that time when people really lined up behind Hawaiian Electric and said, whoa, you know, we know this situation. We know how to deal with Hawaiian Electric. We're willing to sort of keep playing with them. And you may also recall that the Hawaii Public Utilities Commission had just publicly admonished the utility for essentially slow walking the state's energy transition and said, look, you've got to shape up. You've got to find ways to get more solar on the grid and find ways for customers to participate in this transition, or we will force you to do that through regulation. And so there was a lot of excitement around how the regulators were beginning to treat the utility. And I think stakeholders in the energy field were sort of thinking that there was a beginning of a transformation happening. And so we had this interloper from Florida come to the state. And by the way, NextEra was a parent company for Florida Power and Light. And Florida Power and Light have really scaled back on access to rooftop solar in that state. And so people were really worried that they would take the same approach in Hawaii and very much go for large utility scale solar farms and utility scale wind projects, which really were sort of counter to a lot of the values of people in Hawaii.
And yet now we have a big push by Hawaiian Electric to get a lot of rooftop solar on residential homes.
So, you know, the utility kind of scored a pretty big win, I think in the fall of 2015, where the Public Utilities Commission said, you know, the standard net energy metering process that we had allowed is going to be modified, and essentially homeowners who want to put rooftop solar on their homes will not get as much back for generating that electricity. And so the incentive structure for net energy metering really matters to utilities, and utilities all over the country are really fighting to reduce the amount that they pay to homeowners for those homeowners generating electricity on their rooftops. And so that might be a part of this story. You know, I think Hawaii is interesting because you don't have infinite space, you know, to put these sort of mega projects in place, unlike other places in the country where there are broad swaths of land. And so that could also be a part of the utilities calculus. I'd be interested to sort of run the numbers on that as well and really understand what the economic benefits are to the utility for promoting more rooftop solar at this stage. You know, investor-owned utilities do nothing unless those choices benefit their shareholders. I mean, that's ultimately the structure and design of the investor-owned utility.
And the PUC did really force Hawaiian Electric to change its model, saying you can't be doing business as usual.
Right. You know, again, I cut my teeth on domestic energy policy in Hawaii, and it was such a fascinating place to learn about energy policy because we have people on the street who know what the Public Utilities Commission is. Right? We had people who sort of are able to talk about energy policy in a more sophisticated way than other people around the country because electricity and the energy system has such an intimate connection to the daily lives of people who live in Hawaii. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that 2014 order where the PUC said, look, you've got to change, really was sort of a bombshell in the broader energy policy landscape around the country. And I don't think I can overstate just how significant that order was and how other regulators around the country were sort of looking to Hawaii and saying, oh, if Hawaii can get it right, then we might have a chance. And there was a lot of sort of hope around Hawaii's energy transition at that time.
So what do you hope to bring to your new job as a deputy director there, given your experiences here in Hawaii, you know, when it comes to power and politics?
One thing I really learned from my time in Hawaii was that you have to listen to people and that people have the best ideas about what the energy system should look like in service of their humanity. And so after I left Hawaii, I actually came to Boston and started another organization called the Initiative for Energy Justice. And through that work, I also learned about listening to people and translating visions of communities into policy ideas and frameworks. And so as the new Deputy Director for Energy Justice, I think listening will be an essential part of this role. And I learned that first in Hawaii.
All right. Well, we will be watching your progress there in the office from afar.
Well, it was such a gift to be able to be in Hawaii during that time. And I learned from so many people, elders, colleagues, stakeholders, advocates, about just what a just clean energy future might look like. And so I feel very privileged to have spent time there.
That was Shalonda Baker, a returning guest here on The Conversation. She wrote a new book, which is out now. It's called Revolutionary Power. It provides a perspective on Hawaii's transition to green energy and the power behind it.